on our water toys if that's more your style. Cruise through parts of our beautiful harbour you've never seen, like Orkete Falls, the Narrows, or Shagtree, or head across the bar to the open coast. Go to raglanboatcharters.co.nz to learn more about Wakahua or to book a trip.
Raglan Fish is giving away corn fritters all through winter. If you order a meal deal online or in person, Monday to Friday, you'll get a corn fritter for free. All you need to do is order a meal deal via the link on the Raglan Fish Facebook page or head on down to the wharf at the end of Wallace Street to make your order. See you at the wharf.
Oktoberfest is coming to Raglan. Saturday, 5th of October, the Harbour Hotel is hosting Raglan's own Oktoberfest. Featuring live music, pig on the spit, pork rolls and German sausage, not to mention the finest of steins. Tickets include a filled stein and pork roll. Get them to the Harbour View and on Event Finder. Oktoberfest from 1pm Saturday 5th at the Harbour View Hotel.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Raglan Food Bank.
The food bank can be found at 36 Bow Street opposite the Community House and is open for business between 1 and 3 Mondays and Fridays.
Donations can be dropped off at these times or at Super Value.
Check out the food bank's current needs on our sign at the Super Value entrance or online at surfside.co.nz.
Or find out more about the Surfside Community Services, Food Bank and Counselling Services by phoning 825 5199.
The Raglan Food Bank, Raglan's only true community bank.
Raglan Community Radio, 98.1, the best in the West.
Sorry about that delay. You're listening to Raglan, talking to Raglan. On Raglan Community Radio, Rangel Whangaroa, the time being, 6:09, not as late as you sometimes, but not as early as sometimes either. So anyway, let's see what we can fit into the next hour and 20 minutes or so and through till 7:30. So let's start off by having a look at the weather. And the weather is saying that it's going to be fine for, well, pretty much fine for the next day or so, well, 24 hours or so. I think the rain's supposed to be coming sometime later tomorrow afternoon, evening. That is going to get gradually cloudier tomorrow. Rain's supposed to start round about 6 o'clock, round about 4 o'clock, something like that. Then gradually get heavier as we go into the evening and carry on through into Thursday, and probably a bit on Friday and maybe on Saturday and Sunday and Monday as well. Temperatures in a range of, at the moment, it's 16 degrees. Going down to a cool 7 degrees overnight, but even cooler on Friday night at 5 degrees. Other nights are going to be a bit warmer. Maximum we've probably had today at 18, but should get up to 17 most of the other days, so not too cool. The pressure is, as you might expect with some rain around, not all that high, 1,015 hectopascals. The daylight, 8 minutes to 7 for a sunrise and 26 minutes past 7 for a sunset. Of course, we've had the daylight saving come in since I last talked to you. Apologies, I didn't include that in the things that I mentioned last week. Quite sure how it got missed. Must do better next year. Marine forecast is talking about having a northeasterly of 20 knots and a southwest swell of 1 meter a northwest swell of 1 meter, and the wind rising to 35 knots by tomorrow evening, which is when the rain is coming along. So poor visibility in rain from afternoon, tomorrow afternoon. And the northwest swell rising from the current 1 meter to 3 meters, together with a 2 meter southwest swell. So it's getting rather more stormy tomorrow afternoon. And so that's the weather that we've got coming up. Let's have a look at what's happening this week. And looking at the events that I've managed to spot, then they, as usual, Raglan Ramblers going rambling tomorrow morning. Whilst I ought to mention that this evening, that as usual, we've got the quizzes on at the Harbourview Hotel, usual 7 o'clock for trivia night. So, yeah, tomorrow morning, Raglan Ramblers going rambling as usual, 9 o'clock from James Street, this time off on a long distance trip again across to Wairere Falls over in the far side of Matamata, on the range of hills over there, which you go over on the way across to Tauranga and such like. Still starting off the usual time, 9 o'clock, James Street, or down near the Catholic Church, near not far from Wallace Street, where it crosses James Street, on 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Tomorrow is also a deadline for getting funding from the community board, if you were thinking of doing that. So you must get round to finishing off the application you were doing. I suppose I should mention that this evening is the deadline for putting in submissions on the government's amendments to the mining legislation. So if you were thinking of doing that, you've got till midnight to go and look on the government's website. There is a link, which is probably easier to follow, on the Whangaroa Environmental Defence Facebook page. Have a look there. And you'll also see a graph which shows that by far the cheapest way of generating electricity is to use solar and wind. So why the government wants to use oil and gas is something that I must say is a bit of a mystery to me. So it's not only environmentally damaging, but it's economically damaging as well, which usually you expect right-wing governments to be concerned about. But this one doesn't seem to be, for reasons which I don't fully comprehend. So what else is on? So that's Wednesday. This evening and Wednesday. Moving on to, I don't know what's happening on Thursday. Nothing I've spotted. Moving on to Friday, it's the Growers Market, 5 o'clock on Stewart Street. It's at 6 o'clock. It's Joyden Mai. You Are Medicine album release, $111. That's at the Yard. And the Raglan Arts Weekend preview, which is an exhibition going on till the 28th of October, but it opens on Friday evening at the Old School Art Centre on Stewart Street. So you can go from the Growers Market to the Raw Preview, I think. Saturday, yes. The Old School's got a film on, Ghostlight, live theatre, making sense of a family tragedy. And we've also got the other films which are on Sunday evening as well. So that's not only Ghostlight, but also the Marguerite's Theorem, that's on at 7:30. And then looking at Sunday, they've got The Forge, which is on at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. And what else have we got? Also on Sunday morning, there's the Palestine Support Day. That's also at the old school on Stewart Street, and that's 10 till 2 on Sunday. And it starts off with a film, which is Gaza Fights for Freedom. That's on at 10:30. There's going to be a question and answer session after that. It's a 2019 film, so doesn't cover the current issues, but it does sort of cover the background to how it all arose and where we've got to where we are. There's a part of the film includes a quote from one of the Israeli prime ministers, not the current one, but previous one, who said, "Perhaps if we don't give them enough water, they won't have a choice, because the orchards will yellow and wither." So that's a sort of taste of what the film's going to cover, I think. So the pressure that was put on people who'd been living in Palestine for generations when Israel was created and when Israel expanded and expanded further and now seems to be expanding again. So I'm guessing the question and answer session might be quite interesting. So come along and find out about that. As I say, starts 10 o'clock. There's also going to be Palestinian food for sale. Things like kebabs and falafel and hummus and pita bread and baklava and nafeh. That does say cash only. It also says there's going to be merchandise supporting Palestine for sale, local musicians, information on boycott, divest and sanctions against Israel. So there's a whole load of companies which that includes, and an opportunity to write to MPs about Palestine. Come along and join the conversation, it says. Free event, but donations welcome, to cover costs and support Palestinians in Palestine. So, as I say, that's 10 till 2 on Sunday at the old school on Stewart Street. Everything seems to happen at the old school on Stewart Street these days. Let's have a look. What else have we got? So that's Sunday. Haven't got anything down from Monday, but Tuesday, which is almost a week from now, 10 o'clock at the museum on Wallace Street. No, well, not Wallace Street. Wainui Road, begins with W. Wainui Road. They road towards the beaches, but nowhere near as far as the beaches. Back to the bottom of Stewart Street is the museum annual general meeting. So that's happening 10 o'clock on Tuesday. So those are the things which are on this week that I've spotted. I've also spotted that we've got some buses now going out to Manu Bay. In fact, I caught the second one that ran on Monday, yesterday afternoon. I got the 1:15 bus out to Manu Bay, and there were all two of us on the bus beyond Raglan West, so it could do with some more passengers. In fact, I still don't really understand why they're spending $57,000 a year on it, but it's very convenient if you want to go for a walk on the beach, and rather than having to walk all the way out and all the way back again, you can catch a bus one way. Which means you can go and have a look at things like the tattooed rock and the interesting layers of ash and lava and such like, which are on the headland just between Manu Bay and Naranui Beach. There is some rock hopping, but if you go choose a bus which fits in with a fairly low tide, which it was on Monday, there's a very fair amount of sand to walk on and not too much hopping over rocks. And there's plenty of time anyway if you don't go on a rising tide. So the rocks aren't that difficult to shuffle across if you don't feel like hopping over them. It does take longer, but still possible. And it is quite an interesting bit of coast, and it is about 6 or 7 kilometres altogether from Manu Bay back into town along the beach. So I think it's well worth doing, but I'm not sure it's worth $57,000 a year to run the bus every day so that I can occasionally walk back from Manu Bay. There don't seem to be all that many other people doing it. And I've yet to see anyone taking a surfboard on that bus out to Manu Bay. The idea was that you'd be able to catch the bus at, 8:15, I think, from Hamilton and spend the morning surfing and then catch the afternoon bus back. It is also possible to do a day trip from Manu Bay to Hamilton. It gives you just over an hour in Hamilton, which is scarcely worth spending $12 on. Anyway, the blurb about it says that in the weekend, the first bus to leave Hamilton Transport Centre, because they've added an extra bus at weekends as well, the first bus to leave the Transport Centre on Saturday and Sunday will be 8:45, arriving at Manu Bay at 9:55. So that means it leaves Raglan, what, about 20 to 10, with stops along the way. The next will be 11:30 and 3 p.m., arriving at Manu Bay at 12:40 and 4:10, respectively. So that does give you a reasonable length of day. Maybe some surfers will start using it at weekends rather than driving out there, but remains to be seen whether any significant number of people start using that bus, or whether it's the either empty or has me on it, or it's one other local on it. The two of us were on it yesterday. Weekday trips to Manu Bay currently only happen during the summer holidays. What did do when this media release went out? They will now run all year round, so there is a connection between Manu Bay and Hamilton. Two return trips a day during the week, leaving Hamilton at 8:30 and 12:20. So it was at 12:20 I caught yesterday. Gets here, as I say, around about 1:15. And from Manu Bay at 9:48 and 1:40 p.m. And I just mentioned that Raglan Arts Weekend exhibition, that's blurb about that says the much loved annual Raglan Arts Weekend starts off with the opening of its preview exhibition on Friday. So that's this coming Friday, as I mentioned, 84 artworks for this 14th Raglan Arts Week event are all there for sale, and proceeds go to the artists and towards the not-for-profit event itself. Preceding the official Friday launch is an opening night for the artists, their clients and families. Last year's opening night drew over 100 guests to meet the artists. 42 studios, which will be on the self-guided art trail, each of them submitting two artworks, a piece that they can sell at any price, and a piece which is 30 by 30 centimetres for $200. And this year, the Raglan Country and Blues Music Festival is helping artists to promote workshops, installations, and do theatrical performances. So there's going to be 65 artists in those 42 studios, and open to the public at the end of the arts weekend. So that's Monday, the 28th of October, 10 till 2 daily. And going to be over the Labour weekend, 26th to 28th of October. And the studios will open 10 till 5. And the preview exhibition is made possible by a grant from Chartwell Trust, who've been supporting it since 2020. As we too often have a sad story, by this particular one is from the New Zealand Herald, when I did walk out to the walk back from Manu Bay yesterday, I was going to come over the footbridge and discovered that the footbridge had a policewoman standing in front of it with some police tape behind it. And she wouldn't tell me what was going on, but the story in the New Zealand Herald tells me what's going on, or what was going on. What was going on was Herald says a body has been pulled out of the water at Ragland this afternoon, that being yesterday afternoon. Police believe the body to be missing Hamilton man Luke Berwick, who was reported missing by his family on Friday. And his last contact with them was on the 24th of September, so a week ago. He'd been staying at Ragland Holiday Park since the day before he went missing and intended to go fishing. A man who asked to remain anonymous said he saw the body from a footbridge when crossing the Opotoru Inlet. So that's the footbridge that was closed. I went in after seeing the body from the bridge and pulled him to shore, the man said. He was wearing jeans at the time. I definitely wasn't planning to go swimming. And a woman who also asked not to be named said she was sitting near Ragland Holiday Park when the body was pulled from the water. It happened about 5 metres from where we were, the woman said, right under the footbridge near the playground. A police spokesperson said the the police was called by a member of the public at 2:25 p.m. after observing the person in the water from a nearby footbridge. While formal identification is yet to take place, police believe the deceased is a 31-year-old Hamilton man, and the police will continue making inquiries into the circumstances of death on behalf of the coroner, and would like to extend condolences to the man's whānau and loved ones. And they also had a fixed-wing aircraft which had been doing search and rescue, and on land and sea around Ragland. And police are asking anyone who saw Luke and has not yet reported it to the police to get in touch. And another police spokesperson told the Waikato Herald that the purpose of the aircraft was to cover more ground and see more areas of interest. Police first called for the public's assistance on Saturday morning. In a police statement, the 31-year-old Hamilton man is believed to have been staying at the holiday park since the 23rd of September with the intention of going fishing. And the statement said that he had a good knowledge of the Ragland area and fishing from the wharf, which he'd done at the end of Wallace Street and also on the, at the mouth of the harbour on Naranui Beach, at Manu Bay and on the rocks at Ruapuki. Yet another person going fishing has disappeared, and since I've been missing for a week or so, don't know whether we're ever going to find out any more about that story. So often we get these stories and we don't hear any more about them, so presumably the police report to the coroner and not a lot more happens. We just got to the bottom of the hour, so maybe it's a good time to have the bottom of our items. And if we then listen to our councillor, Lisa Thompson, that will take a good half hour or so. So we'll see whether we can also fit in a bit about the Ragland Club and maybe the Carrier project, see how things go. Anyway, bottom of the hour here.
G Factor Jr. is playing Saturday mornings.
I'll be riding shotgun under the
Hi, I'm G Factor.
Hi, I'm Albert.
Hi, I'm Cole. Time flies
by. Our dad helped us play our favourite song.
Get,
Why not Wakelock Radio?
Tune in or catch up online where anything can happen with the station's youngest ever DJs. Saturday mornings at 9.
Soul of Bangalore, good sounds, good karma.
And it's Lisa talking to Aaron.
Morning, Lisa.
Kia ora. Good morning, Aaron, and good morning, Whangaroa.
So, Three Waters. We're talking Three Waters. The background that I've noticed is that all the councils in the Waikato region were talking about
local waters done well.
That's what the government wants us to call it. I don't like using their branding.
And the discussions that we have in the mayoral forum, and the mayoral forum obviously is made up of mayors from across the Waikato region. I don't go to that forum, so I've never actually been.
That was happening.
That's happening all the
time. And it's still happening.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
But then Hamilton City's come out and said they're going to explore doing their own council-controlled organisation for Three Waters, separate to the rest of that discussion.
That's exactly right. And we've also considered at Waikato District Council going it alone in terms of Waikato District Council and perhaps another entity. You know, we've been really lucky for the last number of years we've had a relationship with Watercare, and that is coming to an end.
So can I ask you about that? Because pretty much everyone has agreed that that relationship was beneficial because they had so much institutional knowledge that you couldn't possibly get in a small council like Waikato District.
And they're withdrawing from that.
And they're withdrawing from that.
In 2026.
I would think that would mean Waikato District Council would be looking for another similar arrangement where you have that. Just that huge knowledge base.
That's exactly right. And it takes a massive amount of knowledge and skills to do the work that needs to be done across a district as big as ours, but also a district that has a number of wastewater treatment plants, a district that has a number of waters reservoirs, a district that has challenges with stormwater, for example. So we actually know that it's not as easy just to do it on your own. So we're exploring the option, you know, what would it look like for Waikato District Council with another entity, for example, like Watercare? What would it look like for Waikato District Council in terms of local waters done well and doing it as a region with other councils? And what would it look like for us to have a relationship with the likes of Hamilton City Council, which we adopted our we agreed to our recommendations earlier this week in terms of exploring what their opportunities are with Hamilton City Council. I was just looking on my phone to get the recommendations as we passed them at the council fee earlier this week. And that isn't a fait accompli, and I know that you said to me off the air, you know, will that mean that Hamilton City Council will run everything or have all the power? We don't know what this will look like until we actually look at all the aspects, what it would look like to have an asset-owning CCO.
It's 2 years of work to get to the point of when we know what that CCO would look like. Is that kind of what I got
it's,
out of that?
It's actually quicker than that. So we have to look at all of that. So we're, you know, investing the time into looking at all of the pros and cons, what's the difference in our debt capacity or our loaning. So we can't make an informed decision until we have all of those, all of the investigation done. And the devil will be in the detail. If we were to go with Hamilton City Council, what would that look like? Would we have a Waters Governance Board, which we do currently for Waikato District Council? We have an independent governance board that does a great job. You know, how would that operate? What's the debt cap? all of those things we need to consider. So we're not just blindly going in and saying, yes, we're going to have this relationship with Hamilton. It's all dependent on that body of work that we need to do, and we need to do that quickly.
Yeah, and so and there, and there's an opt-out.
All of the pros and cons. And it's actually, it's not saying we're stuck in this relationship. We're exploring what that could, those possibilities could be. And we have to do that. And we need to embed something that is going to be of benefit to our ratepayers, to our communities across the district. And, you know, mindful that the decisions that we make today are decisions that are going to have an impact when I'm not there. Next year, none of us who are in council at the decision-making table, it might be quite different. We may not be elected again if we choose to stand. So we have to have something that's going to weather the political climate and the changes and the, you know, that's, and we need to put aside that to try and see the forest for the trees of good decisions that we're making that are going to be benefit later on. And that's, yeah, that's.
So that's, to, in my head, there's kind of two aspects to this. One is that all the councils have got to negotiate the mechanics of who controls what and how it's all going to work. But there's also the original issue, which we go way back to when Labor first came up with their plan, which was driven by the fact, and you've said it, the rating system, you've described as the rating system is broken. There's huge amounts of spending required to maintain the increasing standards for water treatment.
And just the maintenance.
Yeah. So, does any of this solve that problem?
Well, we need to have a look. Well, we have to look at all.
Like, it's still on ratepayers, isn't it, to fund all these services?
It is. It is still on ratepayers to fund all those services, and that's where we loan fund the work.
Yeah.
You know, our $26 million that we're spending currently on the wastewater treatment upgrade for our wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah.
I can't give you a definitive answer right now.
Well, I don't think anyone can.
Will it solve, you know, all of our problems? Will it make it cheaper? Until we do that investigation and get the real details, we'll have more of an idea of what pathway to take. But currently, the decision that we made earlier this week about exploring further a relationship with Hamilton City Council, we don't know all of that until we really delve into the details and get that report so we can make an informed decision with the best information that we can at that point in time to make those decisions, whether it's going with a regional CCO or whether it's going with a relationship with Hamilton City Council, and we embark on that journey. And it would mean that in the future, if other councils wanted to opt in, they could as well. Mm. And or is it that we go on our own and we have some sort of waters excellence entity that's part of council? I don't know, but we aren't excluding any options at this point in time because we can't.
Okay, so there's still and the legislation, have they put out all the legislation governing that?
Not yet,
so we don't even know all the legislation.
Yeah, so it's a massive decision. But then we were in this place in 2016 as well when we decided that we would go it alone with Watercare. And that's been of real benefit to our communities. So I know it sounds a little bit airy-fairy, but that's where we're at right now.
So I would like
to. And it will
to
come at a cost to explore all of those options.
But you can't skimp on the planning.
No, you can't skimp on the.
It's a very bad idea to skimp on your planning.
That's exactly right. You know, and so this is an investment into the future. And it's a decision that once we have all of that information, those decisions we'll make in council.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So yes, we've made in basic terms, we've decided that we will look at what the options could be with Hamilton City Council.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out more as time goes on. So, are council staff already working with council staff in Hamilton on this?
Yeah. Well, our staff work closely together anyway across the different councils, because that's what we do. We already have strategic relationships with Hamilton.
Yeah.
We've got strategic relationships just in the Mayoral Forum with the metropolitan spatial plans with transport. We have it with Future Proof. You know, we've got communities that are right on the border of Hamilton, which is Tamahere.
Bits of Hamilton, Hamilton keeps
and
taking.
Te Kōwhai, and Horatiu. So we've got strategic relationships already with Hamilton City Council, and they will continue regardless of whether we go into a Waters relationship with them or not. So we're already working closely with Hamilton City Council, and our staff work really closely.
And Hamilton keeps biting off bits of Waikato and Waipa districts as well, doesn't it?
Well, the alignment.
As it gets urban area increases. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, okay, all right. So we'll park that till the next press release or decision or update. I don't know what will happen. You mentioned transport. There was an article in the Waikato Times about with four mayors, it was deputy mayor from our area, talking about $100 million in transport funding not coming to the Waikato region, $20 million not coming for Waikato district. In amongst all the Three Waters stuff, have staff had time to tell you guys what that actually means in terms of your capacity for transport spending in our district?
It has a massive impact.
I imagine it does.
It has a massive impact. Yeah. Like, for example, all of safety has been taken out of the budget. So, you know,
so is that direct? That's directed from government?
Yep. So we.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, we might like to have raised crossings. We might like to have cycling. We might like to have things like that. Now, not in the budget, so it has a massive impact. And we're just actually pulling out those details and looking at the impacts. And we've got to make decisions about, because you have your share from central government, and then you have your local share, which comes from developer contributions and the like. And so really what we left in the pot is just local share. So what would we do with that? We haven't even considered that yet, because that decision is so new, and it will have a major impact on our considerations for our long-term plan, which I always talk about every time I come on the radio, because that's where we determine where our spending budget will be and what for the next 3 years of that plan. And so over the coming months, we will be having workshops and we will be considering how we spend that and where we utilise it and how we use that across our district. So, yeah, it's had a massive impact and we've only just touched the surface of what that will actually mean for our communities and what we're able to do or not do.
Mm. So the government's been directive, I guess, about not doing safety stuff and certain things. But also, I'm wondering, have they taken some funding out anyway, and you guys will just have less for the rest of your transport stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, that as well as directly saying don't do those things.
Yeah, it has a massive impact on what we're able to do.
I saw in that article that Waipai only lost $1 million of what they're expecting, but we lost $20 million, and I couldn't work out how they got lucky.
I don't know, actually.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at that, so I don't know.
Could be.
I have enough just concentrating on what our council does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know the feeling. Information flying all around me everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's another one that the government's dropped that on us, and then we have to wait and see. But that's going to tie in with the long-term plan, which is the long-term spending plan, I always want to call it. That has to be decided by, ready to go by July next year.
So we've already started to look at what impacts that will have. We'll be coming out to the community in the new year. Probably about March, April, if not sooner. I'll look at our timelines again and for consideration of what should we keep in and what should we take out. You know, we have to make decisions around the rate strike, how we're going to spend our budgets, where we're going to put that. And we really need our community's input into when we go out to consult. Really need your support, our communities, in what that looks like.
I'm just sitting here wondering with, like, the contract with Watercare runs out in a bit under
2026.
So that's going to happen. So a lot of decisions and the planning for the CCO and all that, like,
That's different again.
But you're going to have to make decisions after this long-term plan. You're going to have to put the long-term plan in place, and then all these big expensive decisions are going to be made in the middle of that.
Well, the big decisions in terms of the relationships you may need, whether we go with Hamilton City Council or whether we go with the regional local waters done well or whether we go it alone, ultimately at the end of the day, we already know how much it's going to cost and what work needs to be undertaken in our three water space. We've done that work.
Right. You know the state of the system.
I mean, there might be things that come up, but we understand as much as we can the cost implications. It's how we're going to fund that and how we can do that best. So we already know that in that water space.
Yes.
It's coming to the long-term plan is how in the budgets that we're going to have where we're going to put our resourcing and for what. That's the big question when we go out to our community in 2025, what that will look like. Because our community is going to have to help us make decisions about what to cut, what to keep and what not to keep.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. The buses, I've heard that at the moment our buses are jointly funded by regional and district council. And that has appeared messy in the past, but I understand that as there moves afoot to shift it all to the responsibility of the regional council. So that will mean...
That's a consider... Yeah.
A rate cut in our district rates, but a rate increase in our...
In your regional
it
rates.
It should be zero sum.
But, yeah. Yeah. So those are decisions that regional council would need to make.
Yeah. So that'll... Yeah. So how long will it take for that to be tidied up? Will it be part of the next LTP?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You'd probably be best to talk to Pamela Story, actually, the chair of regional council.
Yeah. I can do that. I haven't talked to her for a while.
Yeah, and it would be actually be quite good because she's been going around and they're actually doing a lot of work, so it would be good to probably interview her.
Climate Action Plan, is that what it's called? Is that what I was reading with John the other day?
That's exactly
right. So that's come from the subcommittee that you chair, the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee. Did I get the name right?
That's exactly right, Sustainability and Wellbeing. So we...
Are you happy with that?
And it was actually, an update of the current plan for the coming years. So Rachel Goddard and her small team have done a great job on that. So it's those things that we can demonstrate what we're doing as an organisation and potentially what we can do out amongst the community. So it's really awesome that we've got that and as an organisation we can demonstrate that out to the community. And I was pleased, that was passed unanimously. It's another body of work that we do in council.
Okay. The Māori wards situation, which we already know the story there that the council is directing you guys to either have a referendum or
disestablish.
Or just disestablish totally. And I think I might have asked you the question, what would happen if you guys just refused to do...
And that's a question that we've asked as well. And with the environment that we're in currently, it would probably be quite easy that they'll take the councillors out and put commissioners in because we haven't followed legislation.
Well, I did see that there was a council up north, not Kaipara District, because they're the ones that got
the Far North District Council.
The Far North District Council, they directed their CEO to explore what...
To explore that, and so that's great that they're doing that, because whatever the CEO comes up with is something that other councils could utilise, but I think what they'd find is that it's legislation, as much as I dislike that, and I would like us to have gone, let's not do it, but the odds are that we could be, as I said just before, the councillors could be taken out and replaced with commissioners. But if every council, you could see on my face, 452 councils who actually signed the letter saying that they wanted the wards to remain, if all of us said we're not going to do what you've asked, are there enough commissioners to actually run all 52 councils? Yeah. That was my question. But then would that be a reason to amalgamate all into a super council and just have one set of commissioners? That's another thing, that, you know. So I think about all of the different scenarios.
I think a super council, I think that's called a national government.
Yeah.
That's
something that we asked as well. But the advice that we received was that, well, we could be replaced with commissioners. And I'm hoping that our communities actually see the benefits of the Māori wards, and that the referendum says, yes, we want the wards to remain. And remember, folks, it's just two decision makers out of 14. Mm. So it's not as if one group will have more sway or say than another group at the decision-making table.
Well, theoretically, the theoretical Pākehā group does have decision-making sway, but of course those are general seats, and you are in a general seat
in
Māori yourself.
Seat.
So what am I saying? Nothing in particular useful.
No, but yeah. You know, there's equity. And it's only two seats.
And what it is representation and diversity at the table.
It's representation, it's diversity. And I have to say, with the councillors who sit at the decision-making table now, I think we're more diverse than we've ever been. Mm.
Oh, yeah. I've before you were councillor, it was mostly retired farmers. Back 10 or 15 years ago, retired male farmers mostly, yeah, like literally over half. And admittedly, our district has become bigger. We've taken the bit up the north from Auckland City
Franklin district.
And there's a lot of urban growth up there, so it certainly is changing. But
well, we're
so,
a high growth council as well, and the demographics are changing for Raglan, for Ngārua Wahia, for Tuakau, and that
complicates all these things we've been talking about, like the three waters and the transport issues.
Did you see the released statistics yesterday that came out around Māori and the numbers of Māori in communities and the biggest so it was quite amazing. I haven't distilled the information, but you should have a look at it because it came out before Stats New Zealand stats came out, so it's quite telling.
Okay, I don't know what that is. I'll have to have a look.
The changing faces of our communities to Pacifica and Māori.
Oh yeah. Civil defence.
Civil defence, that's right. We're convening our community response group or plan on the 14th of October. So there are various people and organisations that are being invited in, including you. And we were talking about you, my partner and I, yesterday, actually, about how important Raglan Radio is in terms of the emergency management and the comms and the one source of truth in terms of getting out the information when things do happen in our community.
Or if we get what Cyclone Gabrielle did, the one source of anything.
The one source of anything and how we might manage that. So we've got a hui on the 14th of October at 7 o'clock at the fire station. So our fire chief, Frank Turner, has kindly offered that as a venue discussion.
Seems appropriate somehow.
Oh, it's awesome. It's fantastic. So we're well into the swing of that. And Gabriel Parson and I yesterday went about delivering our civil defence emergency wheelie bins to a number of schools and organisations.
That's what was happening at the community house.
Yeah, so we were delivering that to the community house.
Yeah.
So they're resource bins for the event of an emergency.
So what's in them? Remind us what's in them.
Oh, there's a whole lot of things. There are things like axes, if it should be needed, you know, if there was an earthquake. There are gloves, there's hard hats, there are
walkie-talkies.
No, little radios. No, we've got radios that the community response crew will have.
Okay, anyway, outside of those containers.
Yeah, outside of that. Yeah. And we've also got a really good generator as well as part of that.
That's important. I keep finding that out every time we have a power cut.
Yeah, so we've got a really good generator that can be utilised. So it's just resources like collapsible stretchers. So in the event of an emergency, those bins can be opened, and so we'll be delivering them to each marae in our area, mm. and each school, and the community house, for example, Raglan Club, a number of our halls, and other places around the community. Mm. And they were funded by MSD under the Raglan Naturally umbrella, so that'll be really helpful.
Okay, and the motorsport bylaw, what stage is that at?
That or was the bylaw update? Adopted.
Yeah. Oh, it's adopted, yeah. Okay.
So we pass that. That will go to full council for actual sign-off, but we had the deliberations and hearings last week, and that went really well. So that was a very considered process, and the motorsports events policy is much better than what we used to have.
What is different about it?
The detail and the processes. You've caught me on the hop. I have to look at it.
You didn't memorise the whole bylaw.
I didn't memorise the whole bylaw. And those on both sides of whether they supported motorsports events or not were in agreement that the policy was much more robust and better than what we had previously. And we'd been asking that for a long time. So it was very timely. And we had speakers from both those who supported and those who didn't.
Yeah.
So I felt that it was well informed. And we had quite a large contingent of those people who live out at Rōpuki who gave very thoughtful submissions.
Yeah, they're quite organised out there, I feel. I've noticed.
To the motorsports policy. Yeah. So that was really well appreciated. And, of course, we had people from the rally supporters who came in and spoke as well.
Yeah, okay. There's a thing, the community board plan, which council is getting community boards to do, is that...
I need to...
You guys already had a plan, I thought. Before the council last year.
Oh, that was our 90-day plan.
Oh, okay,
and
right.
So I actually need to – I had an email yesterday from one of our staff to go through it because it was left to myself and Dennis to run through that, and specifically me because I wasn't involved in that process. So I need to look at it because there's some of it that – actually, I don't know if it's necessary to have in that plan. And like you said, we already had our active 90-day plan, so I'm meeting the staff to go through that on behalf of the community board.
Is our community
We've got our charter as well.
A bit more proactive than the other community boards?
Our community board is very active in different spaces in the work that happens in Raglan. Ngārua Wahia is a very active community board.
Okay.
Taupiri's getting there. But they're a much smaller community.
Yeah, yeah, and the votes were like 50 votes per person sort of thing.
But certainly there's a desire from communities across the district to be as active as Raglan, but certainly they're not anywhere near the level of what Raglan has been, with the wharf project, innovating streets, when the wastewater overflows, all of those sorts of things. We are very active.
Yeah.
And even participating in workshops and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And our vote is either number one or number two in terms of turnout when we have local
body elections.
I think
ours is number one, actually. I'm not quite sure.
Last time before it was one, this time it was just below somebody else.
Yeah, so hopefully people will be really active next year when the...
Yeah, it's coming around again soon.
It is. It's less than a year now.
Mm.
It'll be a year in October. That's when we usually have the voting.
Yeah. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
That's a pleasure. I hope everyone has a really great weekend. And I just really want to take this opportunity to acknowledge some of the passings of people this week in our community and make special mention of Malibu Hamilton.
Yeah.
And he was always a passionate advocate for all things environmental in Raglan. And I was looking at some photos today of our TPPA rally that we organised for Raglan back in, I think, 2016. And there was a beautiful photo of Malibu walking down the street. And I know that he was very kind to me and very compassionate when I first got into the community board, and then into the position and role of councillor. And I could email him and he would always have great advice and support. He was very kind.
Yeah.
Really, really kind.
And very knowledgeable about things like the Resource Management Act and all those environmental regulations. Yeah,
yeah, and he also had, just lovely advice and a very good energy and very passionate. And I know that for myself, I've missed him in the last few years because he hasn't been around.
Yeah.
And I could email him and ask him for advice, and he was always generous with that.
I know, and I'm thinking, where is, like, the work he did on the surf break protection and the environmental work, and like, who's...
Oh, Kiwis Against Seabed Mining.
That's huge shoes to fill. I don't know if there is any one person who could fill those shoes.
Oh, and with such energy. And I think we did a road trip to the Manukau Water Care Run wastewater treatment plant, and there was myself, Angeline, Roland Pico. There was a whole crew of us that went in, my people mover, and he was the driver. And I was white knuckled sitting in the back because
of your own
he
car.
Was like a Formula One driver.
You got the morning show here mover. On Raglan Community Radio. So, that's Spoon with Inside Out. And I want to welcome Crystal to the studio. Good morning.
Morena. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Now I've closed the door and stopped the cold air coming in. Still a little chilly out there this morning.
Yeah, so good to see the sun though.
Yeah, is it bad for the.
Apologies for that. Not sure what happened there. I thought I'd press the right buttons to make sure that didn't happen. But I was going to play an interview with Crystal afterwards because one of the projects that Malibu worked on, which hadn't been mentioned so far, is the one that's eventually resulted in Crystal working on the Karioi project. Malibu and I set up the Te Whakararanga o Karioi project, which as I say morphed into that, so we'll come to that anyway. There was quite a big turnout at the commemoration event in Thames, and I was impressed by how many people from Whangarā were there. Malibu died just a week ago, almost exactly from now, many people are missing that advice, as Lisa was saying. Some of us are trying to draw up a list of what he was involved in. It still only runs to about 17 things so far, so I'm sure there's an awful lot missing. But amongst them were, in alphabetical order, genetic engineering free New Zealand. So he was involved in the monitoring work that happened at Ruakura with the experiments they were doing with calves there, and they kept on failing to get the medical formula that they were trying to get from the cows, and ended up with them mostly, I think, going into the offal pit at Ruakura. So that was one of the rather less pleasant jobs that Malibu was involved in. He got involved not only with Ruakura but quite a lot of other places around the country, really. Huntly Boxing Club set up a club there to, or helped set up a club there to get the kids off the streets and involved in something else. Also involved in a toxic waste issue over there when they were proposing to use one of the old coal mines to dispose of toxic waste at Huntly. He set up Kaifanua Organics, which for many years was a successful producer of local organic food. Kiwis Against Seabed Mining, he was one of the founding members of that, and helped them to win the legal case, and gave quite a lot of advice on that. Of course, we've got fast track coming up and it might completely override that, but we'll see. Certainly it's kept it back for quite a while. He was involved with the Raglan Coastal Reserves Management Plan. So back in 2021, he was talking to the planners about that and got quite a few changes made in that. As Lisa's just been saying, he was involved in the water and stormwater and sewage here, but I'm a member of the Raglan Stormwater Advisory Group, because he was one of those that was objecting to the stormwater not being cleaned up on the way into the harbour. A lot of the archaeology and stormwater work that was done at Rangitahi was down to Malibu. The Surf Break Protection Society, he was a surfer, and they've that society was set up by Malibu and some people in Whangamata, and the achievement there is protecting 17 national significant surf breaks and an awful lot more that be classified as regional significant. That was of course, including the surf breaks here. He set up Tainui, he was on the management committee of Tainui Hapu Ki Whangarā. He was a past president of Te Ngaro Ro o Moi, and he was involved with the Waikato Council's district plan and managed to get Papakāinga housing into that one. So we've got the housing where Lisa's living at the moment, the down near the end of Wainamu Beach, the Wainamu Road, and also the new one that's being built on Wainui Road. He set up the Whangarā Affordable Housing Trust. The national government came at the wrong time for that one. So an agreement which had been reached to create some houses, state houses in Whangarā fell through, but Habitat stepped in and built one house as a result. And there was a curtain bank which gave some help. Of course, we've now got another housing group, but they're also struggling in a similar way to that one, and haven't yet even got one house built. He was involved in the formation of the Whangarā Environment Centre. He's a committee member on that for about 10 years, which is where I first met him. And we set up the Whangarā Environmental Defence to make sure that there was no jetty going out from the museum using treated timber just over the top of a shellfish bed that quite a lot of people use. So all in all, quite a lot of things that Malibu did, and some discussion of having some sort of memorial. So again, if you're interested in that, have a look at the Whangarā Environmental Defence Facebook page, and there's some ideas floating around on there as to what may or may not happen. It's now just come up to 7:10, so it probably ought to have the top of the hour items, then we'll listen to it.
The Harbourview Hotel, the centre of Raglan, a bastion of good time. Great food, music, live bands, sports on the big screen, functions, gaming, accommodation and more. Join us for weekly entertainment, Trivia Tuesdays and Major Prize Draws Thursdays. Saturday entertainment, Sunday brunch and enjoy a beautiful meal in our award-winning restaurant. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harbourview Hotel.
Starting a landscaping project or just need ideas? Come and see us at Raglan Landscape Supplies. We have all the landscaping products you need. From stones to sleepers, sand to bark, drainage meters to builder's mix, pavers to compost. We even have a plant nursery. We deliver to your door. We have free customer loan trailers. We also hire out a post-hole borer, concrete mixer, compactor and water blaster.
Please check out our website, www.raglanlandscapesupplies.co.nz.
We are at 140 Tomato Road. Look for the big green wheelbarrow or ring 825-0577.
Hey, I'm hungry. What do you want for dinner?
Oh, let's go down to the growers market, Mum. There's always something yummy there and we can get all our veggies and fruit for the week at the same time.
Great idea. All the produce is grown locally, which means that because it's super fresh, it's more nutritious.
I love hanging out at the growers market.
And I love meeting all the growers. I'll grab the bag with our reusable containers.
Don't forget our bowls and spoons.
The Raglan Growers Market, by the community, for the community. Every Friday from 5 to 7pm on Stewart Street.
Support local. See you there.
If you have ever thought about volunteering, now is a great time to contact Volunteering Waikato. Their website makes it easier than ever before to find the right opportunity in your town. Get involved in your community, boost your CV, meet new people and learn new skills. For more information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
Raglan Community Radio is celebrating 30 years on air. 2003 to 2007. 2003.
Raglan Community Radio finally has an easy year. After years of being stuck in a bad location, financial problems and bad vibes, the DJs are humming and the community is loving the station. And so is the government.
2004.
Raglan Community Radio celebrates 10 years on the air.
96.6, the best in the West.
Despite the disasters and near misses, the station is still here.
2005.
We spent New Year's Eve dancing in the street, and after years of DJs blowing up the studio speakers, we finally got some high-quality cones that could handle the pressure.
2006.
The station changes its frequency from 96.6 to 98.1 FM 98.1 as we move FM. Our transmitter up the hill behind Extreme Waste and broadcast on a powerful 100 watts.
Ooh! 2007.
Internet costs finally come down low enough for the station to begin a live stream on the web at raglanradio.com and people start to tune in from all around the world.
Raglan Community Radio, 98.1, the best in the West.
Finding it the best in the West. One of the people who spoke on Saturday was Crystal, and before we knew that Melody had died, she also talked to Aaron. So this is the interview that Aaron and Crystal did talking about Carrier Project.
Hey, got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. That's spoon feeding.
Yep. Yeah, so they leave the chick.
I should have learned this at some point with those conversations with you. But
Yeah, you should have, Aaron. But it's okay.
And I know that
I'm forgetful too now.
One of the changes that we're all undergoing. Sorry, that refers to a conversation we're having off air. And I know that what I do remember is the chick's protection is to projectile vomit smelly food at anything that comes down the burrow.
So, yeah, if they have food in their tummies. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they get a big feed and then the parent leaves and then they might not get a feed for 7 days. So that big feed nourishes them for that whole time.
Wow.
Until the next feed gets delivered.
Mm. And I know birds have like crops in their upper throat where food can be stored before it gets digested. Do they have that? Some birds have that.
No, it goes straight into their
stomach. Straight in the stomach.
Yeah.
My dad had this interesting hobby. He raised budgies when I was a kid. So I saw these little tiny little pink blobs under nests and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Cute. Yeah,
but they had the parent would feed it and it would get all this big bulge in its stomach, and not in its stomach, in its neck.
Yeah.
Where the food sat in the crop for a while and then it went into the stomach.
Yeah.
Not like that with a seabird.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, I've learned something. So last time we talked to you, you were in the middle of a fundraiser because you needed what you called a side-by-side vehicle, something to get up the back of the farms to get to the bush line and save the walking and carrying and the extra time that was taking.
Yeah.
Fundraiser, you nearly got to the target, didn't you? Like, it was pretty close.
Yeah, we set a $30,000 target, and that was just, to kind of cover our bases and all the cost potentially involved.
Yeah.
And then we got just under $28,000.
Okay.
So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And, amazing match funders, businesses, local businesses getting on board.
Yeah.
It was really exciting. And then suddenly it was over and it was like, oh, wow, we really have to sort this now. But we really got a good deal from the Honda guys in Hamilton and through one of our local farmers, Mike.
Yes.
And so they bought us out one, a second-hand one, and to trial. And so we got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's allowed to drive it?
Everyone on the team that has a side-by-side, four-wheel drive training.
Okay.
Yeah. So we need to have the training before you can drive it.
Mm. Yeah. It's not exactly a flat road up there, is it?
Yeah. And it's like, you've got to do all your health and safety, obviously. But, pretty exciting because – it really just allows us, like, increases the scope of the work that we can do in one day, but also just allows us to get volunteers up there and gear. And yeah, like, it's quite a significant haul up, you know, across farmland to get to the bush line.
Yeah, and I know, having been up on one of the farm behind Dreamview Farm, that it gets increasingly steep as you get up to the bush line.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you still got to be careful, and we don't always drive all the way up there when it's super wet, even with four-wheel drive. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's awesome, and, yeah, just had great support from local farmers and, you know, to help us get a good deal, and, you know, they'll come out and service it for us on the farm, which is cool. And, yeah, it'll be just great, like, for expanding the scope of the work that we can do.
Yeah.
But also, if we have to do work around the other side of the mountain or on private land, so it just helps with access. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Is it fun to drive?
It is quite fun to drive, yeah. I drove some volunteers up the other day, and I was like, you do feel that weight of responsibility. But you just take your time, and, yeah, like, the awesome thing is when you do the course is that the guy who's super experienced, you know, driving four-wheel drive off-road vehicles, just shows you how the capability of the vehicle as well, and, like, how, like, we were driving along really steep edges, and then he got, like, Jasmine to tip it. Like, it literally just tipped onto its side.
Oh, yeah.
And just showing, you know, how far you can kind of take it. And, like,
so it just tipped over and just was okay.
Yeah, it was just sitting. I mean, we weren't driving it at the time, but he just kind of got her to drive on this really steep bank, and then it just tipped to its side, and she's sitting there in the, still in the vehicle.
Oh, really?
Tipped over.
Did she know that was going to happen?
No. It was awesome. And then he just showed how easy, you know, you can also lift it back up. And I'm not saying that then you should do that, just a little disclaimer, but it just, you know, like, when you do the course, it just helps you kind of figure all that out and see, you know, how
and
it
it's
works.
Good to know what that limit actually is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I remember being on my uncle's farm down near Nelson when I was a kid driving, and he would drive these old Land Rovers, and I was a little kid, and I'd freak out because it was such a steep angle, I thought we were going to roll down the hill.
Yeah.
And he had taken the doors off, so that he could just step out if he needed to.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but I'm presuming he was more careful with us when we were with him, his little nephews.
Yeah. You definitely have to be really careful. So, but, yeah, obviously there's farm tracks and places that we can easily access. And
Yeah. Cool, all right. And we were talking about the oi before, and that there's chicks out there. How's the count? Do you have a count for...
Oh,
how
yeah,
many actually, you've got at the moment?
Well, we're going out tomorrow. We actually had a few things have happened. Is that we had the species dog out, which I might have already talked to you about.
It's about to come, I think, last time we spoke.
Okay, so the species dog came out. So we did have we do have quite a few active burrows, around 30.
Okay.
And then the exciting thing is that we've got about 9 little penguin or little blue penguin, they used to be
really?
Called burrows. Yeah, so that was really cool. So we've seen them popping up, and we've fledged some chicks in the past. But I really felt like I wanted to do a really big survey of the coast. So we went all the way from Manu Bay to the south end of the beach. And there's between that area, those two areas, like all that Half Moon Bay area, and the south end of the beach, we've got little blue penguins, burrows.
Right. How vulnerable are they down there?
Super vulnerable.
Yeah, that's my worry.
Yeah, so the burrows for little blues, they can climb actually up to 300 metres probably, but it's amazing where you can find them. But our ones are really low on the beach, just above like the rocks or just above the beach.
Yeah.
And, yeah, really easily accessible, like holes that like little dogs especially can get into, but also pigs can dig them out.
Right.
Or big dogs that dig.
Yeah.
Because they'll get a smell of it, and they smell really strong. And so dogs can sniff them out so easily. And so from we do camera work like 24/7, you know, infrared camera. So we can see what's going on around burrows and what predators come by. So we've had a pretty couple of really bad incidents where dogs that have been on the loose have got into burrows. We've had several adult birds attacked, and we just had a post-mortem come back Is that what it's called? Post-mortem?
After it died?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wondering if I got my words right. Yeah, so that's kind of like, it was really sad to read the report actually because it was just broken everything and internal damage.
How big
the
are
bird
they?
Had how, just how been big, smashed.
How big was the bird?
So the bird's like probably, a, like I always say, the size of a skinny chicken, but with a wingspan of a meter.
Yeah, I'm just thinking though, like I've seen I've seen dogs when they're playing, they like, a lot of them, they'll shake something really vigorously.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which is, the purpose is obvious what that's for. But, yeah. So I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, so we had smashed. Young birds. We suspect that, so the attack happened around Burrows, but around Bryant Reserve. But what we think might have happened is that younger birds have come in and they got smashed by the dog. And the dog didn't get the parents of the chick in the burrow.
Yeah.
From what we can see so far. But, yeah, just really gutted that dogs are basically on the loose at night. And so we have been able to contact some landowners, which is awesome, and they've been really supportive about trying to manage this. But what we're also seeing is lots of dogs, like down Bryant Reserve and at south end of the beach, there's actually a sign from council up saying yeah. – Dogs on the lead if you go south. Dog can be off the lead if you go north.
Yeah.
And towards like Rere Kiriopa Drive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're really kind of wanting to put a call out to the community to respect that southern end. That's where the burrows are. And the parents of little penguins come in every morning and every night, come in and out to feed chicks and go back to the sea.
Yeah.
So, and it's just so special that these birds are coming back. Like, you know, despite the losses, we're still seeing this more birds come back, more seabirds, and they're literally competing with our, you know, beach going kind of, you know, and residents that live around there and saying, hey, this is our home too. And, you know, please look after us. And so that's the kind of message we want to get out is like, hey, it's a small thing. Put your dog on a lead, get down to the beach, walk north, and then, you know, like after you get to the like life-saving kind of, you know, well, I was going to say tower, but it's not
where
there
it
anymore.
It used to be.
The toilets and changing room. Yeah. Then like have them off the lead there and make sure your dog's fully under control, you know, as you know, like so.
Or take a walk from down the other end of the beach by, at the end of Rere Memorial Drive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's been a little bit of carnage. And then we also had last week a stoat get into one of the burrows and kill the chick.
For the penguin?
No, the petrel chick. Okay. Yeah, oi chick. So,
but you said you had 30 active burrows. Is that a record? That seems like a heck
no,
of a lot.
No, we're monitoring up to 50 now.
Okay.
Yeah, which is incredible compared to 8 years ago. We knew of about half a dozen. And so there's more and more popping up and more birds coming back and staying. And that'll be because there's less predators around. But then occasionally we still just get a random stoat come in. They catch this, you know, the smell and they get into the burrow. So it's just like so annoying, so devastating when it happens. And we have burrow buddies that get really attached and they have to watch this video footage and then see the carnage, which is a bit traumatic.
Someone has to monitor it.
Yeah, like yeah, and there's a whole bunch of us that do that work, and there's months and months of investment of time and effort into that. So kind of like really positive story, like just so delighted that these birds are coming back and they're hanging in there. But we really feel like we're at a point now where we've pivoted things so much, but we really need to get people on board around that dog control and these other bigger predators that we don't really think about, because we talk about predator-free being rats and stoats, you know, mustelids and possums, but actually it's also cats and dogs and pigs and ungulates even, like hoofed animals, you know, that are also impacting our ecosystems.
Yeah.
And we do also need to manage those.
Just damaging it.
Yeah, just damages.
Well, pigs are famous for damaging and stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, and a few pigs in a big area is not a big deal. But when you get them on the coast, they just completely destroy the habitat. And then all the weeds come in and the birds just don't come back. Or they just it's too much damage of the area, the habitat. Mm. So, yeah, so there's still some big problems, but we do find that there's incredible support, and when we get a chance to talk to people, they really get it. So I'm, yeah, just really encouraged, I guess, by the response we're getting, the local farmers, local landowners, people with those bush blocks and areas. You know, like a lot of our seabird stuff on the coast is supported by landowners, private landowners.
Yeah.
Some of them are literally under people's, you know, sparples and decks.
Yeah, you've said that in the past.
Yeah. So, you know, so it really requires them to get on board, and they are. And so we're definitely going to be probably a little bit more outspoken, I guess, about some of these things, because it's such an easy thing to do. Putting your dog on a lead, you know, keeping your cat inside at night. It's not a big deal. It's just common practice in many areas, and it helps us kind of live hand in hand with wildlife.
All right. Now, the other thing you've got going on, something about the Matuku.
Yeah, Matuku Hidepo.
Yeah.
So that's the it's a wetland bittern.
What type of bird is a bittern? Because I hear that name.
Yeah, like I need to pull my notes out now.
Okay. Oh, you're going to show me. You're going to show me a photo.
Yeah, I was going to show you a photo.
We can't put that through the microphone.
No. So it's a threatened species, nationally critical. I'll show you the photo, and I didn't realize.
It's a bit like a little wicker.
Yeah.
For want of a better comparison, but
it's not little. It's like half a meter high.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and so I always used to look at this picture myself and go, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. But
cute little thing.
Huge legs. But then I saw a stuffed one that Doc has, you know, in the little box.
Yeah.
And it's like up to there, and it's got this huge legs and beak, and it's so amazing. And we have this in Raglan, like in Whangaroa, and at Torapara Wetland, and wetland areas just outside of town. So, so it's just so cool. And it's... You know,
I noticed that's the Australasian bittern.
Yeah,
do they fly over? How do they get here?
Yeah, so they fly. Well, I'm not too sure how they
got
here.
Must be like storms and things. So it's that sort of.
Yeah, so they're also in Australia, New Caledonia.
Okay.
So they are native, and there's probably only it says nationally critical, and they, you know, you hardly see them, but given that you hardly see them, there's maybe only about 1,000 left in the country. Mm. They're just trying to do surveys at the moment that we're part of.
Right.
It's amazing how many we've already spotted in this, you know, our area. And so we're really trying to – we're doing a workshop in the school telling all the kids about it. So all our junior classes are getting like a species workshop about the Matuku. And – and then we're also doing surveys. So we just did the first ones for 3 nights in a row last weekend. And then next month we're doing another one. And this survey is happening all around the north of the North Island and the West Coast, like from different community groups.
So are you out all night? How long are you out for?
No, so it's just in half an hour or so before dark and after dark.
Probably quite hard and to then, see them when it's dark, isn't it? That was a stupid
question. Yeah, so you can't see them. But the reason why we're doing it in the next 3 months is because it's breeding season and the male booms. And I can't do the boom for you if you're going to ask. I can see that look in your eyes.
I can't do photos, but we can do.
But it's so cool. And they do this boom. Sometimes they boom 5 times. And then, see if you can play it. It's so cool. So what we're listening out to is the boom that the male uses to attract mates.
Can you hear that? Oh, no, you can't hear it.
No.
God, we're not getting any booms at the moment. We're just getting running water. Let's go back to the start. It's there. Although that seems to be one in Britain, but...
Yeah, well, that's exactly the same. Yeah.
Right. So
and we're just coming up to the bottom of the hour. So if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, then you probably tuned in to listen to the music. And you're listening to Raglan Community Radio, where we've got Luke W. with the ride. But before that, let's just remind you that Raglan Talking to Raglan is on every Tuesday, 6-ish till 7:30-ish. Hope you might wish to join me next Tuesday. And let's see if we can now get Luke W. with the ride playing.